From 90.7 WFAE, this is a special edition of Charlotte Talks, a public conversation on school assignment from Spirit Square's McGlohan Theater. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools would like to reduce concentrations of poverty at certain schools and provide more opportunities for equal access to success. The process will involve new student school assignments. CMS is just in the beginning stages of this task, but it has already become a contentious issue. Listen to the voices of these parents.
We don't want to affect negatively anybody else in any other community. But the point is, we want to keep our local schools our local schools.
What's implemented now is not working. That's why the issue is being addressed, because it's not working.
If we lose our homeschool guarantee, I promise you that CMS will lose my family and countless other families like mine to homeschooling in private schools.
I'm proud to be from Charlotte, but I'm not so proud of our school system and the way that we have allowed the race and the economic standing of a child to determine the quality of their education. We are better than that.
If you go down this path of student assignments, all you're doing is moving chairs around on the deck of the Titanic.
We really have to address the issue of the gerrymandered neighborhoods.
The community school is what determines my involvement with my child's education.
While I'm a proponent of neighborhood, I like that it's close. I also value things like diversity in a school. I think you can value both, and it's not our kids versus other kids and fixing problems.
So this hour, we will hear more voices on all sides of this issue in an effort to address concerns and get questions answered. We'll hear from members of our live audience, and for those listening to our special live broadcast on Wednesday evening, you can reach us at WFAE on Facebook or on Twitter at Charlotte Talks. We begin this public conversation with two school board members. Tom Tate represents District 4 and is chair of the CMS Policy Committee. Rhonda Lennon represents District 1, and throughout this hour, we'll be hearing from WFAE's education reporter, Lisa Worf. She may have some questions of her own, but we also have her here as sort of a fact checker. And you've been to a lot of these meetings, and you've talked to a lot of the players involved and parents involved in all of this. So as you've attended all these things, what stands out to you about this issue, Lisa?
Well, there's this tension between the board's goals, right? On one hand, reducing concentrations of poverty, and then on the other, you know, don't mess up what's working. So how do you do that has been the big question, and it's the question that's created a lot of fear. I mean, fear for the school board on not wanting to lose parents, engaged parents who take off for charters or private schools. You know, fear from suburban parents who like their neighborhood schools and haven't heard the word neighborhood in board discussions and think this means putting their kids on long bus rides to struggling schools. And it's also inspired hope from people thinking this could be a way to give a good education to all kids.
As we go through this, it seems like it's an impossible task. Why do you want to do this? Why is it important that this be done, and why do we have to do it now, Tom?
Well, when we wrote guiding principles 5 or 6 years ago, we decided that about every 6 years we would consider a complete look at student assignment because things change. And we have basically, in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools over the last couple of decades, changed our student assignment plan when we were required to by some court case. This was an opportunity for us to look and see what's happening, what's working, where it isn't working, what can we do. And so the board is taking what it said 5 years ago very seriously, that we're going to look at this and see if we can find a better way to educate every student.
Rhonda, you may have a different point of view than Tom does on what the impact of these pockets of poverty are, but I'd like to hear from both of you about what you believe the impact of these pockets of poverty are on students, on the school system itself.
Obviously, anytime that students come to our doorstep that with more challenges, it's going to be harder to get them to a level of academic success that really is desirable for their future. But we have children from all over this county, from the north clear to the south, east to the west, that have challenges. It is our job to partner with the rest of this community. And I think where I have a little bit more of a difference of opinion is I don't believe that you fix problems caused by poverty, by transportation, or by putting drawing circles on a map and boundaries for schools. I believe you fix the root causes and also the manifestations that high poverty causes children by engaging the entire community. We have students for 8 hours a day and 180 days a year. There's 185 more days and 16 more hours a day that we need to be engaging these students, and it's going to take an entire community effort, not just on CMS. We are not the cause, and we cannot be the entire solution on our own.
But what is the impact? What's the impact on students? What's the impact on teachers? What's the impact on the school system itself of having schools that are predominantly drawing from underprivileged children?
Well, what we see in those schools is that the kids typically don't reach the same goals that other students do. And studies indicate that that's true.
And how will moving them around improve that?
Well, other studies have also demonstrated that where there are varieties of kids together, that they actually do better, and they all do better. It's not just that some are going to do poorly and some aren't, that they all get a chance to do better. And Mike, my second month on the board, now 10 years ago, we established a vision that was going to be the best education available anywhere, so that all of our students were able to have a great, productive life. Well, we haven't been able to do that, and we've tried a lot of things. We're trying still a lot of things to just say, we'll take all the poverty that there is and we'll do the best we can. We haven't been able to figure out how to do that and really get the kids educated to their strongest, their best level.
Lisa?
And I think the challenge, too, with CMS is that you have a district that is majority low income. And so, you know, with the studies, for example, that show that, you know, there are gains and the achievement gap is narrowed, I mean, a lot of that is in, you know, when there's a good mix within, you know, middle class, that's a good part of the school. And the challenge in CMS is, how do you get that good mix?
When you look at a map of where students, where these pockets of poverty are, it is clear that they are not in South Charlotte, and it's clear that they're not in North Charlotte. And I have a District 1 representative here and a District 4 representative here. The poverty is in 2 and 3. Maybe we should have invited them. Will I be hearing different points of view from the representatives from those two districts?
I don't believe you would. I think that all of us have heard from our constituents that parents want their children educated in a school that's close to where they live so that they can be engaged. But the difference is they want the best programs for their students in those schools. We aren't, you know, we have to quit just talking about the numbers of moving kids around. Because like Lisa said, we could try to, you know, average out every school and we would still have a majority-minority district, no matter every school, because we don't have enough kids to spread that around. The biggest thing, and Mr. Tate is correct, there are studies that show that schools with a broader mix of socioeconomics tend to do better. There's never been a study, though, that anyone can provide to me, because I've been asking for it repeatedly, that shows that if you take a school that's high poverty and you take a school that's not high poverty and you mix them up, what happens to the actual test scores? There's not been anything that showed how things improved. We know from looking at the existing pockets that schools that are diverse do better, but they've never shown a student assignment plan that actually corrected that. And that's why I want us to look at other means other than student assignment to make an impact on the academic success of our children.
Give me an example. What's another way to do it?
We need strong mentoring programs. We have principals in this district that tell us that the first hour of the day they have to deprogram the kids from the violence and the disruption of the neighborhoods and the house. So we need to do something about the house. That's not the school. That's the house that's causing it, or the neighborhood that's causing it. We have children that don't have somebody to sit with them and read. There was a study last week that said 92% of kids don't have anybody reading with them. We need mentors. We need literacy volunteers. We need Boy Scout leaders. I'm involved with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Big Brothers and Big Sisters has a 99% graduation rate, and that's because each child is given a person that cares about them. Every kid needs their person. My son has me. I'm his person. But there are kids out there that don't have their person, and so, every kid needs that.
So when you hear Rhonda say these things, Tom, what goes through your mind?
Well, I agree with that everybody needs that person, that mentor, that's the kind of program that Communities and Schools is doing, and they're trying to get a mentor for every child who really needs one. But we need to do, as a school system, that this Board of Education is the only group that can assign students anywhere. So if we're going to continue to have schools that underperform and kids that don't get a good education, then we have to take full responsibility for that because we haven't done our job to make sure that those kids are going to get what they need.
And there are a lot of parents who are concerned just about the fact that we're talking about this because they like the schools they're in. They don't want their children bused long distances. They value a good education more than they value diversity, according to some of the surveys that I've seen. And they don't want the educational experience to decline for their kids because they're trying to help somebody else get a better experience. So what do you say to those parents who have those fears? What do you say to them?
Well, I go back to my own children who were in schools where they were not majority in any sense, at least one of my daughters, and it was the best education she could imagine than we could imagine because it actually worked. She learned. She not only learned educationally, she didn't just learn how to read, write, and do arithmetic. She also learned about how to get along in this world, and our world is really different than it was when she was in school. But it gave her an opportunity to really get to know the community and to know people. And her education never suffered. The teachers are going to teach the kids wherever they are. And if there are fewer needs in schools, then the teachers are going to have more time to actually teach. And that's part of what we've got to do.
Rhonda.
The difference is what Mr. Tate did with his daughter, what they did as a choice. They chose to go to a school that was diverse. They chose to leave their home school. So when you take the choice away from parents, you have the angst that's been created in this community, the fear of what taking the choice away from a parent. So when you make a choice, I also was in a graduate of CMS in a school that was bused. My daughters were in CMS for 7 years before the court-ordered busing ended, and we were in a school that was artificially contrived because it was a magnet school. So I think that the thing that I think, and I agree with Mr. Tate, and I respect him so deeply, and I know where his heart is with children. We both have deep respect for each other. The thing that I don't get, and maybe it's because I view my role as a parent differently, I cannot be sacrificial to my child. I'll be sacrificial with myself and with my time, with my resources, with my volunteer time, but I'm not willing to forego anything that I think is not the greatest thing for my own child, and that's very selfish, but that's my job.
You mentioned choice. I've about a minute left. Is there another way to do this? Can you do it through expansion of magnet schools and magnet programs? Can you do it by giving people choice? You want to go to that school? Fine, go.
Well, we have tried choice, and we're going to continue trying choice and magnets. We want to expand all that. That's one of the reasons a bond is pretty important for us right now, so we actually will have some choices. But right now, we don't have schools with choice. We don't have schools that they all have waiting lists, the ones that people want to get into.
What if you open the whole system up and just said, pick a school, any school, go?
I believe that we should have a guaranteed seat in a school close to home that every child that wants it, and then that the children that do not want to stay in the school close to home, we need to have ample choices, both academic programs, facilities, locations, diversity issues. I think choices is absolutely necessity.
Do you worry that if you go through this whole process and you don't get it right, the schools are going to be worse than they are today?
We won't get it right. There's no perfect fix. Until we as a society change the culture and change the accountability of every child and every parent, we aren't going to get it right.
I have 15 seconds. Tom, you want to answer
well,
that?
We're going to get it as right as we can. That's our job. So we're going to do everything we can to find out. That's why we're hiring a consultant to come in and with fresh eyes look and see what we're going to do, what we can do, what can work for us.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from two parents who are also representatives of two organizations on opposite sides of the same coin as Charlotte Talks continues from the McGlowan Theater in a special edition on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. In this public conversation from Spirit Square's McGlowan Theater, we've heard from two members of the CMS School Board, and now we bring in two people representing organizations with concerns on both sides of the school assignment issue. Justin Perry is co-chair of OneMEC, a group pushing to increase diversity in CMS. And Sean Belcher is a CMS parent and a member of CMS Families United for Public Education, which advocates strengthening neighborhood schools and improving the system's magnet program. Welcome to you both. Good evening.
Thank you.
Good evening.
And Lisa Worf continues to be with us, WFAE's education reporter. Sean, CMS is about to hire, as we just heard, a consultant to go through all of this, and your group has already come up with a proposal of its own to take this to the next step. You have a three-pronged approach. What is it?
Well, our three-prong approach is close proximity to neighborhood schools, a turnaround support programs that are viable and helpful and efficient to the communities that they're in, and option programs that provide good options for homeschools for all kids, for all parents.
How did you come up with that?
Well, I'd like to say that I came up with it, but that's not the case. We literally started as concerned parents and really started listening to not only our district, but all of the districts, and listening to their concerns and kind of almost modeling what the survey seemed to provide as well, but coming apart to decide that that would be the three points that really made
And you've submitted that to the school board?
We did.
And what has been the reaction?
We've had good reaction. I think you've had some that have said, you know, how did you come about with this? Where did you, you know, come up with some of the statistical data? Where did you really kind of get this whole basis for, you know, making sure that every family deserves a great school this close to home?
How is it different than what is already in place?
I think that's kind of a spiked question, because if it was how it's different from what's already in place is what's in place right now is we don't think that all children within the very large CMS system are getting an equitable foundation for having a proper school in their home area.
So when you say you want to strengthen schools, are you talking about all schools, or are you talking about only the schools in the areas that are struggling?
Well, wouldn't you want to always ensure that you're strengthening all schools?
One would think that they're trying to do that right now at CMS throughout the system. One would think that would be the goal. Is that not the goal? And how would yours be different? What would you do differently, I guess, is the question.
Well, I think if that was the goal, then we probably wouldn't be having this conversation if it was actually already attainable. With that said, you know, how we look at it is that we are trying to say you need to actually look at the school within a specific community and see what the root cause, what the root problem is, and why certain schools that are in a same district are not necessarily performing at the same pace. They're not creating the same grade level proficiency.
And how would you do it?
Well, I think honestly, you know, there's a perfect example. There's two schools that are in D2. You had mentioned D2, D3. They need to be probably represented as well here. They're two schools, and they're at 69% EDS. And one of the schools is performing at 53% grade level proficiency for the EDS students, and one is 20%. Mm. So that goes to the whole theory that, you know, all poverty schools possibly are not going to perform because they're not able to be mixed socio, however you want to diversify it. And we're showing that in the same exact community district, one school is thriving while one school is 2.5 times less performing versus the other.
Both of you, I believe, are products of CMS. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
And I know that you, Justin, went through the school system at a time when the school system was remarkably integrated, and you called that process transformative for you. In what way? Why?
I think it just really impacted me in terms of the way I view the world. When I think back to that time, learning, as Mr. Tate talked about, was, yes, about figuring out the basics in terms of reading, writing, arithmetic, but it was also about figuring out how does the world work and how does this information that I'm taking in, how do I transform that into a productive use in society? And so it also kind of pushed me to have strong critical thinking skills and to really watch what's happening in the community around me. I've told folks before that in 99, when I graduated, there was a group of us that went down to protest at the courthouse when the case was on the books, because we were worried that what we have now was what would happen. We were worried that our schools would become much more isolated or segregated, and that there would be a greater gap in opportunity, which is what we're experiencing right now in Charlotte-Mecklenburg.
So you're a co-chair of OneMec. What does your organization want to see happen?
I think, you know, I want to kind of talk about some of the things that were mentioned. I think sometimes there's misinformation. So I think a lot of folks think that we're working to de-emphasize proximity when the reality is what we're asking the board to do is re-emphasize diversity. So again, it's not so much about creating this big gap of either or, but what we looked at is the guiding principles that were put in place in 2010. There are five of them. Mm-hmm. Number one was proximity, and that's okay. But the problem was diversity went all the way down to number four. And so what happens with that is the questions, even in the survey, make it seem as though the only way to have greater diversity is by busing folks longer ways, when the reality is there's a lot of folks that could be bused shorter ways that would create greater diversity. So we don't have neighborhood schools. We have strategically stratified real estate design schools right now. And so I think it's important for us to look at it honestly at the housing policies as well. How do we work in conjunction? Because Ms. Lennon was correct. This is not just a CMS issue. Mm-hmm. It goes into our housing policies as well. However, CMS does have a role, and those guiding principles do have a significant role in how we do things moving forward.
There was a recent poll of parents conducted, I think, by CMS that revealed that most are highly satisfied with their current schools and believe that they are racially and economically diverse. No matter what part of the county these people lived in, satisfaction is highest in the southern part of the county and also in the northeastern District 3. But do you see these people as deluded, or is this an argument against doing anything because they're happy?
No, I don't see folks as deluded, and again, I respect CMS very much. Also, with that survey, one of the things that I would say is that in terms of looking at diversity, it was divided into like three different ways. So there was one question asked about proximity, school close to home. That's a pretty simple thing. But then we've got diversity by socioeconomics, diversity by religion, diversity by race. And so it makes it very complex. And then also the last question that I said before that says, are you willing to have a longer bus ride for diversity? Mm-hmm. You know, versus, again, if you put both, are you willing to have a longer bus ride and are you willing to have a shorter bus ride? I think one of the things that happened was folks have been mobilized around the idea that we're working to get busing brought back in. And we've said flat out from the beginning, our goal was never to bring back how we did things before. What we said, one of the reasons why we wanted there to be a consultant involved was that they could look over the city and the surrounding towns and figure out a plan that makes the most sense based on the way we're currently laid out.
We want to turn out kids who can read and write and critically think. And I'm not sure we're doing that anywhere in the country anymore, but that's the ideal goal. What has diversity got to do with any of that? Why do we care if a kid graduates from high school being able to read and write and think and do their own research? Won't diversity take care of itself over time? Because they'll get those jobs and they'll all be together in these job situations. Won't it take care of itself? I'd like both of you to answer that question.
That's fine. Go ahead.
You got it.
I think the first question that everybody can ask is define diversity.
Well, I was going to ask that in the third segment, but go ahead. Define it for me. What is it?
I don't know what the true diversity is. It can be a number of things. It can be religion. It can be race. It can be economics. It can be background. It can be proximity. It can be a number of different things. And even to Mr. Perry's point, he mentioned, you know, reemphasizing diversity. I think diversity has taken on even something that the school board has stepped away from, that how do you define it? Even the survey hit 2 points out of a multitude of points that can be used in a Webster's definition of diversity.
All right. So we speak directly to socioeconomic diversity, and we understand that the reality is there will be an intersection often in racial diversity that plays out directly. So part of that has to do with legality, but part of it also has to do with research. And, you know, going all the way back to the Coleman Report, all the way back to 66, and it's been repeated over and over through peer-reviewed studies that the value of greater diversity enhances the opportunity for kids who are isolated and more concentrated in poverty while not taking it from kids who have more access.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I believe today that I read that you have said that diversity, of that socioeconomic diversity, is not only helpful to the poor kids who are come in contact with more affluent children. But it's also valuable to the more affluent kids. How so?
I've said before, and I was telling Sean before, I'm one of those strange people that when I talk about the value of diversity, I'm looking at the impact it has on our concentrated poverty in terms of giving greater opportunity for success, but also look at the impact of concentrated affluence. And I've said as a clinician, I deal with the impact of a lot of concentrated affluence where there's higher rates of anxiety, depression, eating disorders, a lot of substance use. And I've said often that we have a significant prescription drug and heroin epidemic that is happening most in our suburbs that I first found out about from a minister in Matthews. And so when I say that having greater balance is valuable for both parts, that's what I'm talking about. Unfortunately, a lot of our kids that are concentrated in affluence right now are running through a different kind of rat race. It's a rat race of competition, not only in academics, but also from a material standpoint that leads a lot of them to have struggles that, again, in my field, we address a lot. And so it's about social-emotional health as well as academic achievement.
Sure.
I'd like to speak to that. I think that, yes, there is a lot of things going on, and I think that you look at it from a diversity standpoint, and you said socioeconomic, and you said addiction and things like that. And, you know, those are all great points, but they're not points of the Board of Education. And the reason I say that is because addiction is a criminal offense to some degree when you talk about heroin. I've heard you mention it before that it's high and prevalent in the Southern District. But that is a law enforcement group that needs to handle that. It's not a Board of Education group. From a socioeconomic standpoint, it's not something that the Board of Education is going to be able to handle by bringing different children into different areas by changing, as Rhonda said, on a map somewhere. That doesn't work quite like that. Would you not agree that it takes almost a village instead of just the board?
Definitely takes a village, and the board is part of the village. And so what I would say to that is, and so again, this is again based on research as well. There's a study, The High Price of Affluence, as well as a book, The Price of Privilege, that speaks to this. And so reading one of those studies, you could have forecast what was happening in Charlotte 8 years ago. And so this is why I say the value of actually looking at research is key. And Mike, what I would say is, it's actually identified as a public health issue. The president actually just spoke about opiates and prescription drugs as a public health epidemic. And so public health is related to school as well. It's not just test scores.
But can you have a healthy population of students
Absolutely.
And you get a good education
Absolutely.
Without diversity?
What I would say is this. You know, the thing is, you can do anything. So you can, the same way you can have an example of a school that has high concentrations of poverty right. that does well. The point is, what is more likely to occur? And so it's about figuring out trends and recognizing research and not turning our backs on it when it's not convenient.
So your group, Sean, Families United for Public Education, advocates for neighborhood schools. And in your report to the school board, you suggest that recognizing the diversity that already exists in our classrooms should be used, and to use the even greater diversity that exists system-wide as an opportunity for shared learning. That makes no sense to me at all, so explain it to me.
Okay, well, I think first, before you go down that path, I want to speak to, you know, diversity as a whole. It's such a large word with a very, very large definition. And I'll even use somebody, James Ford, who spoke with One Mech. He stated that race, where you live, income level, has no influence on how smart you are or how capable you are. It does have a level of influence on your level of opportunity. And I think that speaks kind of to that point of diversity within a classroom. Diversity can be depending on who you're asking. I'm sure that if you ask Mr. Perry's definition of diversity, it may be very different from mine. If you ask a Chinese or an Asian person, their idea of definition of diversity is going to be different. You could ask a 7-year-old and theirs is going to be different. So from that, I think that you really need to look at, you know, One Mech will say that they're fair, they want equal and excellent educational opportunity, but I think you need to get to an equitable point of diversity
to
where you can offer that.
I know you have respond to that. No,
well, I was going to say, and we've been consistent throughout that we mentioned socioeconomic diversity based on And so with that, Mike, I think there's a part that we haven't mentioned, which, again, is this study that came out about Charlotte-Mecklenburg, where we were 50th out of 50 in social mobility. going one step beyond that, we were 99th out of 100 large counties in social mobility. The one county that was worse than ours, do you know what it was?
No.
Baltimore County. Hmm. Now, I don't know that that's the county we want to say, hey, at least we're doing better than them. And that's not a matter of saying an insult or anything about Baltimore, but it's saying let's learn lessons. Let's learn from Detroit. Let's not repeat the things that happened here. So, again, Charlotte, Mecklenburg, Wake County, both looking at both of those places, these are cities that grew immensely, you know, in large conjunction with the partnership between their schools and where they did actually value diversity. And now they're both kind of fighting this battle to maintain.
You've credited going to a very integrated school system when you were in CMS of opening doors and opening worlds to you. And is that what you're saying, that if we had a more diverse experience for every child in every classroom, that they would make connections that would lead to social mobility down the road?
It definitely enhances that. Again, two of the factors that were mentioned in the study were our education and our residential patterns that are both segregated. And so peer influence is the piece we don't mention. So again, lots of times having peers who have further experience than maybe my natural world does can enhance the scope of what I think I'm capable of.
Leaving aside diversity for a moment, should we be trying to break up pockets of poverty?
I think that if you're going to try and break up pockets of poverty, you know, using the CMS data that we even had, you take a student from low-income school and move them to a high-income school, and their points are going to go up, you know, 6 to 18 points. You move that reverse, and the slide is going to go from 16 to 22 points down. So I think that trying to break up the poverty is not something that's attainable. I think that what you need to do is go to the school that's performing, look at why it's not performing, and figure out what to do to fix it, to make it a better school.
Sean, how did you, that number, I haven't seen that in national studies, where I have seen it in your report. How did you come up with that number?
You have 10 seconds.
We pulled the number from 2014-2015 Charlotte-Mecklenburg school board data. It's public information.
But it drew a causal conclusion where they didn't have a controlled study, so that doesn't actually work for them.
We're not done yet. We're far from done. When we come back, we'll be bringing back our two school board members and get questions and comments from our audience as well. Stay with us. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're coming to you on Wednesday evening, at least, live from Spirit Square's McGlowan Theater. In this last segment of our public conversation on school assignment, we're bringing back CMS school board members Rhonda Lennon and Tom Tate. They are joining our guests from the previous segment, Justin Perry, co-chair of OneMEC, which is pushing to increase diversity at CMS, and Sean Belcher, member of CMS Families United for Public Education, which advocates for strengthening neighborhood schools, and Lisa Wharf, who covers education for WFA News, is also with us. We are going to open our microphones on the floor to our audience members, and if you're listening to us live on Wednesday night and have a question or a comment, you can get to us at WFAE on Facebook or at Charlotte Talks on Twitter. Let's go over here and hear from you. Hi.
Good evening. My name is Tiffany Capers. I live in District 2, and I have a question that's related to Justin's last comment that I would appreciate a response from the panel. First of all, let me say that I believe getting this right to the degree that we can is a moral imperative for our community. The Harvard study findings in 2014 highlighted Charlotte's dearth of economic mobility, and it cited five attributing variables, of which were residential segregation, school quality, income inequality, and greater social capital, including interracial trust. How do you see the relationship between student assignment and the conversation we're currently having, and this larger issue of improving the quality of life for all of our community, or do you even see that as being something we should be discussing with relation to student assignment?
Rhonda.
As I said earlier, I think that student assignment is drawing circles around schools, and fixing concentrations of poverty and fixing the effects of generational poverty take much more than drawing circles on maps. They take programs, they take interventions, they take the entire community working together. I'm a healthcare professional. I'm involved in in the medical community, and I see the effects of mental illness. We have that throughout the whole community. It's something our teachers have to deal with. I see the effects of all of these things, and that study is troubling, but student assignment isn't the way to fix it. Academic success for all children is the way to fix it, and that's not by drawing circles on maps.
Well, it's academic success. It's making sure that the students are ready for the world in which they're going to live in. And we really do, I think, have as school board, have a moral responsibility to make sure that every one of our kids in CMS has the best opportunity possible. And we're not getting that right now. We're trying to find a way so we can get it better.
We got a definition from our other two guests in the last segment about diversity, but I'd like to hear from the school board folks on this. What does diversity mean? Tom.
Well, I think the primary diversity that we really need to break up is the socioeconomic diversity.
Okay.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that we really need to work on as best we can.
Rhonda.
And what we're saying, what we have said in anything we've written so far, has to say that to the extent possible, basically, that we can do these things. We want to do something that makes a difference for every child.
Rhonda.
I'd point out that that's the policy committee saying that. It's not the whole board, because I voted against that policy. So it's just to make that clear. So let's not speak for the whole board when we're talking that way. So what I would define the diversity is a global view for every child to see the world around them and to see the complexities of the world around them.
Okay. Let's go over here. We have a question from the audience.
Okay. Hi, it's Sean Strain. And my question today is with the resounding results of the survey and research both showing that the best way to educate a child is in their neighborhood, in their community, with good programs tailored for that community, and the mission of the board being to educate and drive academic excellence for every student in every school. How do we go about executing on that mission that both the people of Mecklenburg County through your survey have asked for, and indeed is the mission of the school board?
I'd love to start with a guaranteed seat for each student in a school close to home, and then we need a wide array of programs that are interventional and intentional for students that are having academic challenges. Each student comes to the door of the schoolhouse with different challenges, whether they're a child of affluence, a child of middle class, a child of poverty. They all come with different challenges, every single one of the 147,000. I think the point that we've missed here is that when we were under court-ordered busing back in the day, we had graduation rates in single digits at some of our schools. And the difference is today we have graduation rates that are 5 and 6 times higher than that. We're missing the point that when we were under court-ordered busing back in the 90s and 80s and 70s, even when I graduated, I hate to say, that far back, we had academic genocide going on throughout this county, even in integrated schools. We are failing to acknowledge that that existed. What we've done is we've closed the gap in almost every academic level, in almost every level of demographics. We've closed the achievement gaps. We have raised overall achievement in all subgroups, including the socioeconomically challenged students. So we keep ignoring the fact that we've actually made tremendous gains in the past 12 years.
Justin.
I was going to say, actually, the NAEP scores, which is a more unified way of looking at it, have remained pretty steady throughout. But also going with that in terms of graduation rates, it's also important to acknowledge that what's required to graduate has been reduced as well within the past 6 years in terms of the amount of credits that are required. That's something that was done across the board. And so I think the important thing to look at, again, is when you have a study, you mentioned going back to the other thing about residential segregation is one of our factors, but then we're only using neighborhood as well. By de facto, we're saying we're looking for segregated schools. So again, to me, I don't think the issue is not that we need to have people have to be bused across the county. It's saying, let's look at where we do have opportunities to increase diversity as logically as possible. Let's do that.
I have a question from Robert, who identifies himself as coming from Ballantyne. Why are we talking about solutions without clearly identifying the problem? We all want every student to succeed. And a side note, he says, I hate being labeled as anti-diversity because I am anti-busing for my kids. Is there an answer to that question?
I live it every day. I've been that suburban mom, the anti-everything mom.
Well, what is the problem?
Years.
I guess he wants you to clearly identify the problem.
So I love him. Thank you for having him say that. It's hard because I care about students. I care about diversity. I care about all those things. But the academic success of every children comes first before drawing circles on a map. And putting programs in place in each school is what is absolutely essential. And we've done that. We have some incredible programs that are going on in many of our schools. It needs to be amplified, and it needs to be united with this entire community, civic, social, governmental agency. Everybody needs to be working together to raise up CMS versus beat them up.
Now, neighborhood schools are not in the goals.
But it has been.
Sure, but... I haven't heard the board say they're talking about putting kids on buses and having longer commutes. I mean, is that something that is on the table?
The board has not talked about that at all.
Don't you have to? I mean, if you're going to do this diversity thing and split up these pockets of poverty, don't you have to bus
students? Actually, you've got at least 8 members that have publicly stated they would not support any type of forced busing regime or scheme.
But does that short-circuit any plan that you might have? Can it be done without busing?
And that I think it can be done without the kind of forced busing we've had in the past, yes. But it's going to take the community working together. All of the community working together, and it's providing. What does that mean?
It's going to take all of the community working together. We're all going to drive our kids to school.
When we tried a choice program before, we didn't have any choices to offer people. There were no seats available in the schools that kids wanted to go to. That's why I mentioned that our bond referendum that we want to have on the ballot this year is really important, so that we can offer more choices to kids who really need them. But we have tried. An untold number of programs looking at schools to see what the root cause is for a school, and we try all sorts of things, and where it still doesn't work, and it doesn't work in the whole district, it doesn't work all over, we need to find a better way to do it, and that's what I think that's what we're looking for this time,
Justin?
Is to really to try to figure that out.
You wanted to comment.
Yeah, so I kind of going along with that, I think, you know, one of the things I found really interesting is we've had to jump through hoops to define diversity, but we never really worked to define busing or neighborhood schools, terms that are just as vague. Again, we mentioned we don't have any issues of poverty in South Charlotte, and yet we have schools that are concentrated in poverty in South Charlotte. So again, what I'm looking at again is how are we strategically doing it? So it's not just about the circles on the maps, it's about programming, it's about looking again at all of our community, what makes the most sense to draw folks in. So, yes, we do want to include the value of choice, but we also, I love this city. I grew up here. I have to be honest about it, too. We have to be honest about our housing policies that have directly segregated us, but also we have to look at how is the school board playing hand in hand and feeding that if we don't acknowledge that this school right over here is right in Quail Hollow, but yet it's got a ridiculous amount of poverty. How does that happen while this school over here doesn't?
Sean.
I think, you know, to Justin's point, he mentioned that you want to draw folks in, and I think we all agree that poverty or race or not, we want equity. We want all of the schools in any neighborhood to any person in this room or outside of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system outside of this room that they have the access to opportunities that fit their needs in that specific school that may not be met at this current time, to where they can give opportunity to those children, to where they can all have the same opportunity, then only then can you have equality.
Let's go back to our audience for another question.
Hi, I'm Lori, and I live downtown, and I don't envy any of you for trying to figure out. I know it's hard, and everyone seems to have their heart in the right place. But in my neighborhood, it's a very economically and ethnically diverse neighborhood in the downtown area, and the assignment lines divide us up, chop us up in amazing ways, even though we all live very close to each other. For example, and what I'm wondering about are these assignment lines, why they don't at least follow streets or property lines. Because where my house is located downtown, my school assignment line divides my backyard, crosses through my neighbor's house, and doesn't follow anything that I can tell. But it seems as though if I move my driveway to a different part of my yard, all of a sudden my school assignment goes from a number 2 ranked high school to one that's ranked number 8. So I don't quite understand how homeowners or anybody's supposed to understand the logic behind the assignment guidelines that don't help us to at least be near our neighbors.
Well, I would definitely say that we have boundaries that don't make sense right now. We have, I call them octopus zones and different things that need to be tweaked. That said, a school close to home should be the goal. It can't always be the school closest to home. We have people that live in Chantilly, and Independence Boulevard splits the neighborhood. So the kids can't walk across Independence Boulevard in 8 lanes of traffic.
So we need to look for the school close to home. We have large neighborhoods, Providence Plantation, Highland Creek, where if you go out one end of the neighborhood, you're close to one school. If you go out the back end of the neighborhood, you're close to a different school. So we need to have that be a goal, but it's aspirational. There's always going to be a boundary, and somebody's always going to wish they were on the other side of the boundary. And when we open new schools, we have such huge fights because people want a new school that's not overcrowded, but they don't want to leave and go to the new school.
In the last segment, we had the parents on. I asked them about that survey that CMS took. 27,453 people revealed to you folks that they are happy with the schools that their child is in. So why make changes? You're the school board. I'm asking you now. I've asked the parents. Let me get the answer from you. Why?
Well, because I recognize as a school board member that we are not educating every child. And so I want to do everything we can to make sure that every child gets the kind of education I expect from my children. And because we're not getting that yet, we've got to do something. We may do everything that we're doing right now and look at the consultants reporting to us and decide that we've got about the best we can do at this point and move forward. But we're looking at it to make sure that we will, maybe we'll get some of the uptown area lines fixed. Maybe we'll get some of that done in a concentrated way because we're looking at the whole thing, not just looking at it piecemeal the way we do all the rest of the year.
Should this be being done before there's the superintendent in place?
I think that's fine to be doing it right now before there is another superintendent in place. We have a superintendent right now. We have a good one. But before we have another superintendent, I think it's fine to get it done now. In fact, partly because Ann Clark has been here as long as she has and knows the district from one end to the other, I think we've got somebody who's really well-placed to help the board get this right.
Okay, let's go back.
I have a big difference of opinion with that. So because of my medical background. So when we see a problem, we usually do diagnostic tests to figure out what's wrong versus let's plan the surgery. So usually we get all the x-rays and the MRIs and all that, and then we work together as a team and figure out what the problem is before we start cutting on the patient, because when we do that, we cut the wrong leg off. So I feel a little bit like this process has been backwards. Now, I am not on the policy committee. The policy committee embarked on this journey a little over a year ago, and I didn't even realize that they were doing it because I don't sit on that committee. I think the survey should have been the first thing we did. And actually, when I started getting involved and coming to policy committee meetings, I said, have we talked to the families that are our customers and asked them what they think about student assignment? We went backwards. So we got to fix that right now. We got to own this conversation, but we went about this process backwards.
I have 1 minute left. We're going back to the audience. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Kim Riddle, and I live in District 5, and I love that Mr. Perry pointed out that there are not concentrations of poverty just in certain districts of the county. I live probably 10 minutes
from South
Park. Do it quickly.
Ask your question, please.
My question is, how can CMS make all the schools a high-quality choice for the students in our community?
We're working on it.
We're already working on it. We're trying that right now to make every school the best school possible.
So very quickly, before we come to an end, and we're about to come to an end, what's the next step, and what can parents do to inform the process?
Well, parents have weighed in large measure with the survey, but they're going to continue weighing in at school board meetings the first Tuesday. It's the second Tuesday, but it's our first meeting of each month. We have public time for people to come speak to us. They can do that. They can tell us what they want.
And both of you have organizations. Should they be joining your organizations?
Absolutely. Our goal, again, is to really inform the process a little more and really have parents be involved, really understand what's going on beyond the way the survey was written.
And I'm sure that's also the goal of Sean Belcher. Sean Belcher, member of the CMS Families United for Public Education, Justin Perry, co-chair of 1MEC, Rhonda Lennon from District 1, Tom Tate from District 4, both on the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board. Thank you for your work. Thanks for being with us tonight. Thank you for the hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.